I felt like I was living in a parallel universe because I couldn't quite wrap my head around the fact that this man that had been very much in my life, very much a part of my everyday and, you know, my thinking about my future was suddenly gone. So I had to kind of go, oh, he's dead. In my head, I had to just cut him off like that because, in fact, that man never actually existed. So he kind of was dead.
If you've ever been betrayed, you would know that there are few things that can wound you as much as betrayal. As your whole world just comes crashing down around you like a house of cards, holding on to reality, that can be a challenge. Once the scale of the betrayal has been revealed, how? How do you move on with your life? Tracy Hall is a high-powered single mum in the corporate world, and she was left absolutely devastated after she discovered the emotional and financial betrayal perpetrated by one of the world's most prolific con men, Hamish McLaren. Now, while that part of the story is sensational and rightly grabbed headlines all across the world, for me, the story of how Tracy has built her life back together and is once again out in the world, not just surviving, but absolutely thriving. For me, that's the sensational story. She's an incredibly inspirational woman. She's written a book about it. It's called The Last Victim. And on the show today, Tracy shares just some of the ways that we can all use to get back on our feet after things fall apart, sometimes in a small way, and for her, on a just global scale. It's a fantastic conversation. I can't wait for you to hear it. But first, we've got to pay the rent. So we're going to play some ads and then we're into the show.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
G'day, this is Better Than Yesterday, helping you make today better than yesterday since 2013. My name is Osher Ginsberg. Thanks for being here. I'm a podcaster. I'm a best-selling author. I'm an award-winning documentary maker. I'm a husband. I'm a dad. I'm a stepdad. I'm a long conversation in a sauna haver. And I'm very glad you're here. Tracy Hall is my guest today. Her story of redemption after being conned in a staggering case of intimate fraud is truly inspiring. If you want the origin story, if you want the backstory as to what's happened, there's a whole podcast. It's called Who the Hell is Hamish? You can get into that. But I'm more interested in how did you get through today? How did you get out of bed this morning after that happened to you? How do you put it back together after something like that happens? How can you live the rest of your life? How can you ever trust anyone ever again after what's happened? And that is what we get stuck into today. I'm so grateful Tracy came around here to share her story. I know you're going to be as inspired as I was at truly hearing someone tell firsthand what our capacity for healing truly is and what we can rebuild in ourselves if we are willing to. Tracy is just magnificent. If you like this episode, please share it with someone who needs to hear it. I hope you enjoy this chat with Tracy Hall. How are you, Tracy?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks for making the journey down from the Insular Peninsula.
It is. Good to get out of the village.
For people who aren't from Sydney, there's a bridge between one part of it.
Two bridges, actually.
Oh yeah, there are. Yeah. One of those bridges is always open. The other one, no. Sometimes you just gotta, okay. So there's no boats here, but it says you gotta open at this time of day. And so now you're open. All right. We'll just wait. It's kind of fun. But if you're in a hurry, it's not so much.
Not so good.
Not so much.
No open bridges today. It was a smooth run in, which was great.
Yeah. But you and I are both immigrants to this fair state.
We are.
The Golden Coast?
Yes, Queenslander.
Which bit of the Gold Coast?
Born and bred. I was born at Pindara Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
At Benoa.
Yeah.
And I grew up on the southern end of the Gold Coast to start with, so west of Tweed Heads.
Oh, okay.
And Blamble Heights.
Oh, right.
To a little hippie school out there.
Well, that's the thing. We were up there for bachelor for a couple of weeks, well, months actually. And one of the places we were looking at staying, because I was gone for so long, it's like Audrey, because she worked on the show as well. So Audrey came up and Wolf came up. He was little at the time. And we looked at some of those houses, the places up in the valley there.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, you're like literally got a cassowary in the backyard.
It's beautiful.
Like it's proper rainforest.
Yeah.
And then in 15 minutes you're
at the beach.
Yeah. Among it.
It was amazing. It was a great, great little upbringing. And then we moved up to the northern end of the Gold Coast. So up at Oxenford, my dad opened a business in Brisbane.
Oh, yeah.
And the trip during those days from Blamble to Brisbane was a long way. So we moved up the northern end to make it a bit easier for him.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it when they, sorry, I just talked. If you tuned in to listen to some.
You probably tuned out.
Yeah. Some sort of expose on,
history of the Gold Coast.
Look, I'm so old now, Tracy. I grew up when we would leave Brisbane at Springwood and then you would arrive at the Southport Bridge.
Yes.
And then you were at the Gold Coast.
Yes.
Like, and everything else was literally suburban Nothing. Streets. There was and so to get there was hours.
Yes.
Now it's like 10 lanes.
I know.
If you
crazy.
Time it right, it's great. If you don't, it's terrible. But yeah, what did growing up, you mentioned a hippie school, what kind of like a Steiner thing or?
No, it was just a tiny little state school, Blamble Public School. It was down in the valley. There were 30 kids when we started there. My brothers and I made 33. So we had lots of composite classes and one of my best friends, her parents owned a horse riding ranch down in the valley, and if we stayed at her place, we would ride the horse to school. My horse was called Fudge. He was so cute. And we'd tie Fudge up at the gate and we'd go into school. We didn't have to wear shoes. It was very hippie, very idyllic.
You rode a horse to school?
I rode a horse to school.
I'm going to tell this to my wife, Audrey. She trained as a Jillaroo for a little bit there. So she can ride, really ride. She can do that thing where you just use your feet.
Oh, wow.
And the horse goes where you want it to because she's been, you know.
She talks to
she's
horses.
Got the thing.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, she totally does.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, to ride to school.
Yeah. It was pretty insane.
So I'm guessing in a community like that, you know everybody.
It is fairly small.
You know, there's no need to be sus of anyone really too much, is there?
Like, well, I was very young as well. I was 11, so you don't think too much about anything other than yourself at that age, I think. And for me it was sport.
Yeah.
It's a lot of sport and just hanging out, you know.
Yeah.
Just doing the primary school thing.
Are you a netball kid, a water polo kid?
I was a hockey kid.
Oh.
So I had two brothers. I have two brothers, one older, one younger. And to survive, I learned had to learn how to catch a footy if I wanted to survive in that family.
Yeah.
Lived, breathed, ate sport, and I did gymnastics as a young kid.
Yeah.
And got to a level where it's just, you know, 15 times a week and couldn't do it. So decided to play hockey.
I know someone who played hockey when she was in high school and she had a hockey nickname, but she didn't know she had a hockey nickname until she was at a house party as a 16 or 17-year-old and there was a girl from one of the other schools that they played against. She goes, oh, you're here. And she went, what do you mean? She goes, oh, no, no, we call you Bruiser.
bruiser.
She also had big brothers.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I was that aggressive, but I could certainly play. So I carried that on through until I started working, actually, all through uni.
What were you studying?
I studied sports science.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So you found a way to kind of really...
I mean, studying something you love, it was great. I wanted to be a sports psychologist. I thought being a sports psych would be amazing. And then I did two psychology subjects and I hated them. So I went into sports marketing and sports management. So that's how I got into marketing.
I find that stuff really so fascinating because of the not only the money at stake, but also the window you've got. Say if your client is a NRL player, how long is the average career? It's got to be less than 20-something months. You know, there's a few outliers who make years, but some people, you've got this amount of time and that's it.
Yeah.
And you've got to set them up and their life up and their family up up in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Pressure's really on to get it right fast.
And I think too there's such, you know, the advances in like the science aspect of, you know, getting your body to a certain state to perform.
Yeah.
You know, it's so marginal. But what makes all the difference is the mind.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I wanted to go into that mindset psychology piece with athletes, which is a lot bigger now than it was back in the mid to late 90s when I was studying.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's what I was interested in, but I went in a different direction.
I mean, it's interesting. You find that thing that you really love and sometimes along the way, it happened to me. It happened to me with radio. I just happened to be quite good at this thing that was adjacent to the direction I was headed in. And it paid okay. And people told me I'm good at it. It's like, okay, I'll stay around. And I then started to just really love it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how that happened.
Yeah.
Marketing, though, essentially it was, I'm pretty sure it was like invented by like Frick Sigmund Freud's nephew or something.
Marketing?
Yeah. Like right. The way of... yeah. Here's like, a problem you didn't know about, but you've got this problem. Yeah. Ah, lucky I have a solution. Here it is.
Yeah.
Which is, I think it was around cigarettes in the 20s or 30s.
Probably.
Yeah, he had an activation where women never smoked. And so hired actors, models, to walk around smoking.
Does that look cool?
Yeah.
Subliminal.
An activation, if you will. So, you know, It is an amount of, there is an amount of that in all marketing.
100%.
There's an amount of all of that. So there's still psychology there.
Yeah.
You still got towards it.
Sometimes used for evil and not good, but yeah.
Look at any election campaign.
Yeah.
There are people who studied marketing at university.
Oh.
Putting the word tax on the end of anything that the opposition party does.
100%.
Oh, my God.
A lot of research that
goes Greens coffee cup tax is here to take your jobs.
Yeah.
None of those things are real, but if you say it in the right voice with the right amount of yellow writing on a screen and a scary voiceover,
that's it.
It's all marketing, man.
It is.
It's all ideas and it's all, I won't say, I'll use the word nudging. It's nudging of behavior.
Subliminal nudging.
It's nudging of behavior. So, which is interesting. I'm painting this kind of a bit because coming into your story and why you wrote the book, you're someone who knows all of this. You're someone who's aware of every single way, every way it works.
Yeah.
And what is it about that? What is it about being so well-armed that can sometimes leave people to be vulnerable around things like what happened to you?
I mean, I think we're all vulnerable. To a degree, I think there are times in our lives where we are more vulnerable.
Yeah.
I think, you know, periods of time after a major event, whether it be a serious illness, a death, a natural disaster, a divorce, you are infinitely more vulnerable. We know that. But to be vulnerable is to be human, you know, and I think humans aren't going to stop being human anytime soon.
Yeah.
But for me... yeah, I mean, I would hear these stories, similar stories, and I would think the same thing. As if you'd fall for that. Or, you know, like surely they knew better. And I 100% would have said that. And then here I am, you know, I've lost my life savings to a man who pretended to love me and then was plotting to destroy me while he slept.
And not only that, had done it so many times before.
20-year career.
Oh, a career. I guess
he didn't have a job. This was his job. You know, he was honing his craft for 20 years. And I think if you do anything for 20 years, I mean, I'm a pretty good marketer because I've been doing that for 25 years. You do anything for that long and you get good at it, right?
Yeah.
And you can, you know, very good at reading people. So, yeah, I think vulnerability is a part of it. I think there are a lot of other things at play as well that you don't realize at the time. You know, I had my rose-colored glasses on. I was in love. And I think, you know, when you're wearing rose-colored glasses, all the red flags, they're just flags. They're still flags, but they're not red, you know.
You can't see them.
You can't see them. Other people can see them because they're not wearing the glasses that you are. So there's, you know, there's oxytocin and you're fueled by this feeling towards someone. And then the other thing that I've really learned throughout my kind of healing journey, I could say, like, or the discovery of unpicking what happened, is that we have so many biases, you know, brain glitches, if you will, that create a world in which these people can operate. So, you know, for example, I have an optimism bias. I think the best of people. You know, I've walked in here and I thought, we're going to have a great day today. We're going to have a great chat. You know, I don't walk in thinking, oh, she's going to ask me a curly one or he's out to get me or, you know, I don't think like that. I think the world is an incredible place. You know, I have a similarity bias. So I'm more likely to trust people that look like me, people that talk like me.
From Queensland.
From Queensland, mate. but this is actually the thing. Like he actually spoke in this kind of really Australian way that I could relate to. You know, he reflected values that he knew were attractive to me or values that I had within myself. So there was this mirroring. And you're more likely to trust somebody that is more like you. You know, so there are all these biases that go on that, you know, and I have, there's confirmation biases. You hear a bunch of things along the way over an 18-month period and suddenly there's an opportunity to set up a self-managed super fund and you've listened to hundreds of conversations about managing money and how that works and trades and all of the different conversations that we had. And that confirmation then kicks in. I go, well, of course he's the right person to support me to do this. So there's all of this stuff that goes on without this very subconscious. And when you look into it, I go, oh, yeah, tick, tick, tick. Yeah. And here we are.
What's extraordinary about your story is you're not the only person that this happened to, as you mentioned, there are many other victims, but there's also many other people doing what he was doing.
Yeah.
However, what really hits me about you is that the acceptance of what happened and the absolute, from what I can only gather, just absolute dogged will to be like, and this is not going to ruin me.
Yeah.
I will find a way to heal through this and head back out into the world. Because if you've had that amount of betrayal and that amount of, you know, just financial destruction, I understand why someone would never want to date again, talk to a stranger again, use a smartphone, you know, do anything but walk into a bank. I get it. And I'm sure that makes sense.
Mm.
But what kind of life would that be?
It.
Is that what you were facing, do you think?
Yeah, look, it took a long time to get there. And I think, you know, there are no spiritual bypasses in this life. Like you have to do the work. You know, I've listened to you talk a lot about this. And, you know, often you have to go through the depths of what an experience will bring you to figure out how you're going to rise out. And that took me, in fairness, a good year. And there were components of sort of what had happened that I just couldn't come to terms with. And in that year, I would have rather have laid under my doona and cried all day that's how I felt. I was depressed. I was anxious. I lost 6 kilos in 3 weeks. I was not eating. I was not sleeping. I couldn't. My world became very small. I was really quite frightened of the world in a way. But the reality of my life where I'm a single mum, I had to get my kid to school every day. So I had to get out of bed, make her lunch, get her off to school. I had lost everything. I'd lost my entire life savings, but I still had a job and I had my monthly income. And so I couldn't lose my job. So I had to turn up to work every day. I had a big team of people at eBay at the time. It was a lot of pressure. In some ways, it was a great distraction. So there's that. But I didn't feel like I had a choice to just collapse under my doona, even though I wanted to. And then slowly, slowly, I did a lot of work. I've done a lot of therapy and therapies on this. And just over time, I became stronger. And I got to some realizations that, I wasn't going to let it break me. And you're right, I'm pretty stubborn human when I want to be. And also too, if I remain crying under my doona for the rest of ever, he wins. And he doesn't deserve to win. I want to win, you know? And it's not me against him. It's just, what do I want for my life and my kid? And there was a lot of soul searching. There's been a lot of therapy. There's been a lot of talking. And in that moment, a year later, when I felt stronger, is when I decided to meet Greg Bearup, who was the investigative journalist from The Australian, who I was introduced to a friend of mine. And he just wanted to write a story about what had happened to me. And then as we uncovered and unpicked more, he realized that the story was a lot bigger than what even I knew, because no one would talk to me. I didn't know anything. I just thought this had happened to me. And then we discovered more and more, and we went to Hamish's plea hearing, and we got a document that outlined every victim, every bit of money they gave him, how he did it, where he met them, what their names were. And we just pored over this document, and Greg said, I'm going to investigate this. I'm going to do a podcast. And through that process, I started putting the pieces together. And brains don't like unfinished puzzles.
They do not like it. They don't like disorder.
I could not rest. No. I could not rest until the pieces of the puzzles started to form a picture of what was real, because the previous 18 months of my life was a complete lie.
Hey.
Yeah. Sorry, that was a very long answer.
No. Mate, I've done episodes of this show where I've asked three questions and they've gone for an hour and a half. It's fine. Right. Okay. Like, that's what we're here for. You know, that's what I love podcasting, in that you can't talk about, this is how we end up in trouble in our modern world, trying to look at, shall we say, very critical and highly emotional geopolitical issues. Mm. Because you simply can't sum it up in a sentence, nor offer a solution in another sentence. Yeah. There's absolutely no way.
10 seconds.
You could take 3 straight hours talking to experts and still not get anywhere close to understanding what's going on. The only thing you can understand is like, wow, I need to understand more.
Yeah.
But until we can be with that, I don't have the answers. Mm. We're going to want to search for an answer like this, and unfortunately, that's not how the world works.
No.
But it's hard to discover that. It's hard. I wanted to ask about, in that year, all right, oh my God, I'm awake. I'd not been there. I've been there. But having somewhere to go and having someone who relied on you is an amazing thing. That is
blessing.
That is the rescue helicopter coming to get you out of the
100%.
Ocean. Because without that, that part of your brain that's saying don't get out of bed wins every single time.
Of course, because you've got no reason to.
No.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to go through the motions, and over time that muscle gets stronger and stronger. Yeah. I wanted to ask, with what happened to you, because not everyone's going to have something that's happened to you.
Pretty extreme.
But everyone's got someone. Everyone's got someone that really fucked them over. Like, everybody's got that, right? And sometimes it's hard to know what to do with the rage and the anger.
Mm.
What did you do with that?
I think my anger and rage is quite suppressed. I'm not an outwardly, I'm not the person that's going to have the big meltdown and end up on the floor crying and sobbing and wailing. I just, you know, keep calm and carry on. You know, I made a decision when it all happened that there would be no tears at the dinner table and I would shield my daughter from what was happening because she was really young and wouldn't have understood, and I didn't want her to worry about money. Like, you know, they're concepts that were just too much. The way I dealt with it was I pulled my world in really tight. So I had a very close inner circle. I have a very supportive family. My mum is incredible. I continued to work. I probably distracted myself with work. It was very busy, long hours, a lot of pressure. And then slowly, I would, you know, I did therapy. So there was a lot of talk therapy at the time. Exercise is a massive outlet for me, so I made sure I was doing that. And then over time, I just explored different things as different emotions came up. A lot of it for me was just complete confusion. I felt like I was living in a parallel universe because I couldn't quite wrap my head around the fact that this man that had been very much in my life, very much a part of my everyday and, you know, my thinking about my future was suddenly gone. So I had to kind of go, oh, he's dead. In my head, I had to just cut him off like that because, in fact, that man never actually existed. So he kind of was dead, this man that he made up. And then I had to sort of backward, you know, connect the dots in reverse, so to speak, and figure it out. I'm naturally just really inquisitive about that, and for me to feel peace, I had to sort of put those pieces together. I did equine therapy. I've done breath work. I've done kinesiology, Reiki, spinal energetics. Like, there's a lot of different modalities that I've explored from a somatic point of view because I think I'm not the ragey, angry human. I probably held that within my body more than I should have.
Because that energy is in there.
It's in there.
Yeah.
But I'm just not comfortable with yelling and screaming and raging. Like,
no.
I'll go for a hard run.
Yeah.
Or like punish myself at the gym if I'm really fucking angry.
Yeah.
But I'm just not that person.
I can totally relate to that. That emotional energy can express itself as screaming, as yelling, but anger can also express, and fury can express itself as shut down. It can express itself as stonewalling. It can express itself as all kinds of things.
Yeah. Disassociation, I think, is probably one of my favorites that I like to engage in.
Well, it's a safety bar, and it makes sense, and it's useful until it isn't, until it starts. It makes sense as to why we do those sort of things. What would you say to people about how, if you know someone's been through something, whatever it may be, that does bring up big feelings as an adult? It can be hard to deal with that, to express it, certainly when you've got work, kids, whatever. What would you say to someone about the value of getting that energy out of your body?
I would say if you don't, that you'll be in more trouble eventually. So you can suppress for a while, and sometimes that's a survival technique as well. So in that year after Hamish was arrested, I was just surviving. I was, you know, I felt grateful that I could get out of bed every day at that point in time. But as time went on, then, you know, things changed for me. But for some people, that's a survival technique, and that's okay as well. As long as there's the knowledge that at some point in time you have to face those feelings, those emotions, whatever it's bringing up, because, you know, for me, if I didn't address those things, I would take it into every other relationship, friendship, work situation, you know, and that wasn't, I didn't want to live like that. But I think you also can't force. You know, sometimes we see people who are really struggling and you're like, just get to the therapist or try this modality or how about we do this? And it has to come from within. Like, you have to really want it yourself. And there are people who aren't ready to do that just yet. And that's okay as well, because that's their journey. For me, I'd spent enough time crying into my pillow and I was ready to figure out how I would, you know, become a more joyful human again.
I remember the day that happened to me. I remember the day that I woke up and went, oh, this is not getting better. Mm. And I don't want to live the rest of my life like this.
Yeah.
I will not accept this as my life.
Mm.
I'm going to do whatever it takes to not feel like this anymore.
Yeah.
I remember that profoundly.
Yeah.
Was there a day like that for you?
I can't remember a specific day, but I know it was around the year mark.
Yeah.
And I had done some work and, you know, there's that thing that we're either running towards joy or away from pain. And in my case, in this moment, I was running away from pain. I had to get away from the pain but I also wanted more joy in my life. Like there wasn't a whole lot of, I wasn't like doing, you know, star jumps and high kicks very often that year. Like no. I was just, you know, and I remember at the time, sometimes waking up, you know, that feeling when you wake up and you're just like, I actually don't know how I'm going to get through this day. I don't know how I'm going to get to the end of the day and be back in my bed. You know, that big grey blanket is weighing you down and just the overwhelming thought of everything that needs to happen and how you're actually physically and emotionally going to manage that. And then, you know, I would, in my head, I would go, okay, let's not think about tonight. Let's just sit up in bed and put your feet on the ground. And I kind of like broke everything down into the smallest step that I knew I could do. And it's like, okay, Trace, you need a cup of tea. So you need to take 10 steps to the kitchen and put on the jug. It was like, it was so basic. It was like having to talk to myself like a child.
Yeah.
But for me in those months, if I had have thought, right, Trace, you're going to get on the bus, you're going to go into the office, you're going to run a campaign, you're going to talk to people, you're going to do this, and then you're going to do this, and then you'll go out for dinner. And I just would have burst into tears.
Yeah.
So that's how I managed it. And, of course, as we said, I had a little person that needed me and yeah. I don't have a backstop at home. It's just me.
Yeah.
So, you know, and my daughter's name is Asha, which is a Hindi name which means hope. And so for me, she was my hope. Like she yeah. was the hope I was holding on to, knowing that if I wanted a better life and I didn't want to feel like this, I just had to keep going.
Yeah.
One foot in front of the other.
That technique you describe, I was shown that. And I would call it the hourglass, and that every little step was a grain.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would write the list the day before. Because I was so fucked up. Like in the moment, I couldn't actually make a choice.
Yeah.
In the moment, I couldn't decide what T-shirt to wear. Yes. I couldn't decide what to eat. I couldn't decide anything because I would just freeze in those decision, those choice paralysis.
Mm.
So I would write the list before, the day before, in a cold state. Like this is exactly what I'm going to do tomorrow. And all I would then do the next day is just like swipe through my phone and tick them off.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And had I not had that, I wouldn't have moved. I would have been frozen. Mm. We never learn that when we're kids. We never learn that this is really all you got to do.
Just one foot in front of the other. I mean, it's a saying, right?
Yeah.
Just take one step at a time. But yeah. It is that. And I think, you know, what's been interesting for me to learn as well and as I've reflected on, you know, my time before Hamish when I lost my dad and like grief and the way that your brain reacts in these, in the aftermath of these traumatic events or these big events is that your brain actually isn't, your brain is so busy trying to reconstruct your new reality that you don't know what T-shirt to wear. You don't know what to do next. Like the little things that, you know, I know in the, you know, after Dad died, like the mistakes that I would make at work. And then I was doing that again after Hamish. I was like, oh, this is a familiar, you know, this is, and it's not like you never make mistakes, but it's just my brain wasn't functioning. So I had to put in some things just to get through those basics to get to a better place where I could decide what T-shirt to wear the next day.
I'm just going to take a quick moment away from that conversation to say if this episode is bringing you value, please do share it with someone. You can find the mailing list, which will update you about episodes, live gigs and things like this at oscherginsburg.com. The link is in the show notes to that. And anywhere you can find the show, we would love it if you could rate or review. Leave a review. It's magnificent. It's lovely if you do, and it really, really helps us. It doesn't cost you a thing, but really helps us here at the show. We're back in a moment with Tracy Hall.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
One of the things that you talk about is something that I always find fascinating. I can't remember the name of the study, but they perpetrators who had committed a violent mugging on, this was up in New York somewhere, it was in the 70s or something, around Times Square, when it was really quite violent. They showed these guys in prison, who were in prison for assault and you know, violent robbery. They showed them footage of people walking from the waist down. And these guys would sit there and go, no, oh yeah, easy. No, they could tell by the way they walked which person they would target.
Would be an easy target.
They could tell, they could identify a victim just by the way, just their lower legs and their feet walking.
Wow.
The way they walk. You mentioned about vulnerability and, you know, being in this space. I mean, like after a divorce, a loss of a loved one, the last thing you want to do is, you know, better make sure I don't get scammed. But, you know, this is part of the identification of a victim, isn't it?
I believe so. And yeah, like we were saying, in the year following a major event like a divorce or a death or a major illness, you are far more vulnerable. And that's when we have to be extra vigilant. And it's probably the time when personally we don't always have the capacity to be extra vigilant. So this is where awareness and education before something like this happens is useful. But also too, if we're supporting those around us that are going through that, that's where we can be extra vigilant for them. So being their eyes and ears and making sure that they're not, vulnerable. And it may not be a scam. You know, what happened to me was so extreme. And touch wood, you know, let's hope I am the last victim of Hamish McLaren. But, you know, these things will happen again, but maybe not to the extent. But, you know, financial betrayal or emotional betrayal, it's still betrayal. And people really, really are heavily impacted by that. So vulnerability following those big events, that's where we need to be extra vigilant for ourselves and for our loved ones.
We don't want to be jumping at spiders, though.
No.
So
and
what have you learned about that?
Well, this is the other thing, because I think, you know, if we go around, if our world exists in the way that all we're doing is looking for the red flags, then for me personally, that's a pretty shitty fucking world to live in. You know, I don't believe the world is like that. It's probably my optimism bias coming through. But I think we need to be really curious. We need to be really, you know, I do think we need to be vigilant. And the other thing I've learned about that is that, you know, Hamish was an outlier. He is operating at the top 1% of sociopathic offenders. 99% of people in this world are bloody good. And I truly believe that because, again, for me, my world would be super shitty if I didn't believe that. And that's what I genuinely believe. But that's not to say I don't, you know, I'm probably more vigilant now. I would say I'm probably more skeptical, not cynical. I don't want to be cynical. I want to be skeptical. Curious, ask the bold questions. So not just sort of passively let these things happen around me because and when you're in a vulnerable state, that's when they can grab you.
Before I met Audrey, who you saw outside, I spent absolutely horrible, like probably 13 months or so on Tinder. It was just the epitome of just like
it's gross.
Just ridiculously bad. And I would go on dates with women who had, some of them were still in relationships, you know, husband's out of town. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
It's like,
it's so fun.
What, no, this is terrible. Like, do you understand how much risk you're putting me at? Like, no.
Yeah.
But I'd also go on dates with women who had been through, I'm not saying the same thing as you, but had were coming off the back of something really terrible and going through this checklist of things with me, like literally asking me over a cup of coffee, you know, have you ever been prescribed medication for bipolar disorder? Like that clear.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, no. Like, okay. Like this is where they were as part of their vetting process of trying to date someone.
Mm.
I'm not going to say it happened in the first year, but soon enough, you know, you're like, I really wouldn't mind a cuddle here or there from a human, you know, that feels good against my skin. How do you even begin to get dip your toe back into that pool?
Well, I didn't. that dating in your 40s is a whole, that's a whole nother podcast we could have.
Oh, man, tell me about it. I tell guys all the time. It's like, mate, you're going to, I talked about it just today. I did a thing earlier today and I was like, oh, he's a father. He's like, I'm a father and a stepfather. It's the fatherhood that no one talks about.
Yeah.
Is stepfatherhood. That's right. If you're going to be a single man in your 40s, you're going to date women with kids.
Yeah.
And there's a whole other aspect of life that you're going to need to get up to speed on very freaking quickly.
Yeah.
Particularly if you haven't got any kids of your own, which I didn't when I first met Georgia, who you met upstairs. She was 10 when I met her.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
is. It's a whole, it's, you know, and it's, I think for me, you know, I was single parenting. I was, you know, working full time. I had a lot on my plate, but I did, you know, before I met Hamish, I did want to meet somebody and I've been separated from my husband for about a year. So I was kind of ready, same thing, ready to just meet someone who I could go and have a bit of fun with. And, you know, I think the thing is there's sort of at that time of my life, there was sort of little time for dates.
Yeah.
And probably less time for dickheads, but I came across quite a number of them, which gave my friends a lot of good content. We had some good laughs, but you know, I really wanted to meet someone, and then you know, Hamish came along, and you know, megawatt smile, National Geographic blue eyes, and liked to do the things that I did, and you know, I was obviously the perfect target. But then after Hamish, I didn't go back to didn't go back there.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
It'll take the time it takes.
Yeah.
You know, that's it, you know, and that's, it was so weird. Oh, man.
It's a whole.
Dating again is so weird.
Yeah. It's a whole.
So freaking weird.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And look, as a young man, when I had all the hormones coursing through my body, making many choices for me, I could never imagine a time where I'd be like, I'll be okay. I'll be all right. And then as I got older, I'm like, if it's trying to satisfy that or have something that is respectful and lovely and kind, I won't satisfy that.
Yeah.
I'll be okay.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
But I had, you know, as a you know, young guy, you're like, I will stop moving. Like everything will end if I don't. Like, no, it'll be okay, pal. Like,
yeah.
I'm glad that. For some people, really, all they want is the testosterone to be massive all the time. Like, occasionally, the drop in testosterone is actually all right. It helps you make kind of better choices sometimes.
Yeah,
which is.
But that's the you know the benefit of maturity and age and then having met someone beautiful and having a family yourself. Like you know.
Yeah. When you're trying to go through your day as someone, you've got a big gig. Your job is like in the big.
It was
the top end of, you know, where your jobs are.
Yeah.
You're going to have to, you know, you're meeting people all the time. You have to keep a network of people. You got to go and chat with people. Da, da, da. How do you build up the resilience to, you know, get out there and speak with people and engage? Because, I mean, I don't have to tell you about any kind of business, but every business is on relationships. And if people don't feel they've got a connection with you, they're not going to want to do the deal because they're like, it might be 10 years with this person and I'm not really clicking with them.
Mm.
Or, oh, I really get them. Yeah, they get it. Yeah, we'll go with them. You've got to actually be emotionally vulnerable in a deal situation if you want people to close.
Mm.
So how did you even get to that point?
Yeah, I mean, it took time.
Yeah.
Again, time is such a beautiful thing that we have that we want to sometimes go a little faster than it does.
Yeah.
But I think in business it was a little easier for me because it didn't have that emotional attachment.
Yeah.
You know, I felt so violated emotionally and personally when with Hamish. At work, you're kind of, I'm always who I am, but I'm also just a persona. You know, people don't get that, you know, that deep. The connections were there. The personal risk isn't as high, so I could probably separate that a bit. I think for me, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, how do you trust again? How do you get back to that place of, you know, being open and all of that? And I think, you know, what I say is that trusting other people is one thing, but the hardest thing for me after what happened with Hamish was that I didn't trust myself anymore.
Having a good relationship with a psychologist, someone that you can trust, that you can work through this kind of stuff, is super important.
Mm.
It sometimes doesn't happen straight away. What would you say to people about finding the right psych and taking the time to find the right psych?
If you don't feel it, then keep looking. You know, I've had multiple people that I've spoken to in my life over a whole range of different issues. And I also think, too, some people are the right person for that time, the right person for the right time, or based on what you need to work on. So I haven't done talk therapy for a while now. I do more somatic work now, and I have a mindset coach who is very spiritual and has opened my mind to a whole bunch of things that I never knew, and, you know, unblocking barriers and much more directive than a CBT style type of thing. And for me, I'm appreciating that right now, because sometimes I would go to my psych and say, I just want you to tell me what to do.
Yeah, right.
What do I do now? And she's like, well, what do you think you should do?
Piffle.
And I'm just like, come on, give me some answers.
I find that really fascinating. I had a particularly big breakthrough with and as you mentioned, you know, psychs come into your life, and when you finish working on the thing you came to work through, you part ways. And then something else shows up and you're like, I might need a different flavor here.
Yeah.
But this person, they specialized in Hakomi therapy, which is a very physical kind of thing. It's essentially closing a loop on the trauma response.
Okay.
So like in that moment you wanted to run. So let's do something with your legs.
Okay.
All right. And then so picturing the moment as uncomfortable as it is, and then doing something with your legs, like that it involves muscles activating.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just blotting it out. But after the session you'd be like, oh, actually it feels better when I think about it now.
Yeah.
It doesn't trigger the same thing in my body, because the hypothesis is the body hasn't completed the thing it needed to do in that state. So denying that the physicality is not a part of any kind of trauma response is futile.
Because
it will, as you mentioned,
it is.
You can't ignore it, but it will come for you.
It does.
It eventually comes for you in one way or another, because it starts to dictate the choices you make, and you start to then just live on a smaller and smaller space, and everything starts to be frightening, and soon enough you are bringing it to reality. And then your world really is closing in on you.
It does.
Because you literally can't see it in any other way. It's really fucking hard. But,
it's so hard. Mine comes to me at 3 a.m.
Right.
So that's the sleep thing with the restless legs and then, like you said, this kind of this circular demise, because when you haven't slept you're a pretty shitty person the next day. And it's not only shitty, you don't cope.
No.
You know, life is really hard when you haven't got enough sleep and decisions are tricky, and you then don't exercise because you're exhausted, and you probably make bad food choices. Like, it's this cycle, and so that's something I've been working on for the last 3 years.
What would you say about turning to face the thing that has been so damaging to you? And having the courage to do that.
I think, like what we said before, if you don't, it's going to come bite you on the ass at some point. I think you can only ignore deeply traumatic impact for so long. You know, we don't get out of here alive. You know, like, we just, you know, these things are going to happen, and they're going to happen to us. They're going to happen to the people we loved in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
And for me, I can only really speak for myself in terms of what I want my life to be. Is like, I have to face it. I have to face it head on. I have to do the work. It doesn't mean you have to shout it from the rooftops. You can do it privately. But if you are feeling levels of you know, discomfort, or you are butting up against things in your life that keep stopping you from going where you want to be, whether it's, you know, some sort of, you know, barrier from your childhood or whatever it might be, it does take courage, because it's fucking hard. It's hard and it's expensive at times, and it's not pretty. It's downright awful sometimes, but it's almost like you have to go to that place to know that there'll be something better afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think because, you know, I'm not going to say I was lucky enough to have a lot of challenges before I met Hamish, but the things that I went through in my sort of 20s and 30s set me up for a level of understanding and resilience that when this happened with Hamish, I had already been through quite a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So I in some ways knew what it would take.
Yeah.
And I in some ways knew what grief felt like.
Oh, so mate, if I had to take on the psychosis stuff cold, I would not be alive.
Yeah.
I'm happily say it, I'm grateful I got diagnosed with PTSD because that I learned then, oh, just because I think it doesn't mean it's real. Really? So I can reframe something and look at something. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So even though I think everyone's thinking I'm an idiot in this room, they're not. Oh. So I can just attend to that thought. Wow. So then when it came time to get sober, I was like, well, I know that sometimes just because I think it doesn't mean it's real. So even, okay.
And all that
helped.
Yeah.
And I learned so many things in sobriety. Like if you can't handle it, call someone who's not using your brain to think about it.
Yeah.
And ask them and trust that they've got your best interests at heart.
Yeah.
So then when I actually started losing my mind proper, first thing I do is get on the phone.
Yeah.
I saved my all that stuff saved my life.
Mm.
But rightly so, as you mentioned, I knew what it took. I knew that it's hard as shit. It really hurts. You want to avoid it. And yet that's the only way. The only way out of the flames is through sometimes.
Mm.
And you mentioned the cost of it. I would, you know, I know money is a part of your story. On top of the emotional betrayal, right?
Mm.
I would have given every cent of every dollar I owned to have freedom from that.
Yeah.
Those thoughts for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, there's no money I wouldn't have paid when it was really, really, really bad.
Yeah.
And I would ask you, you know, yes, it can be expensive. Yes, it's hard. But living the rest of your life without being able to meet your daughter in a moment of joy?
That's it.
Like,
it wasn't even a question, I guess. You know, I appreciate that I was in a fortunate position where I could afford the treatment that I wanted to seek out. But I also made sacrifices to do that because I had lost everything financially.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, you know, I think, I don't know, I just, I don't want to live in an internalized world that's in conflict with myself. And a lot of these feelings that I've had over the years is just, you know, there's shame, there's embarrassment, there's, you know, you think you're an idiot. Like there's so much that goes on internally. And, you know, I would say to my mindset coach, you know, I don't like conflict. I don't want to have this really tough conversation. And he's like, so you'd rather be in conflict with yourself? And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, it's true. So thinking about that in the way that internally it was eating me up was just not a world that I wanted to live in. I knew it wouldn't be healthy for me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have a great life, you know, but I know what I have to do to get there,
yeah.
You know, and there's going to be other things that get thrown at me. I'm not stupid. Like I know it's going to be tough from time to time. But you know, we only have ourselves to help us get
there. How did you not just want to obliterate yourself on cask wine? Like how, which is the most, you know, publicly available, widely acceptable depressant in our country.
Yes.
How did you avoid that?
I think there was a bit of drinking at the beginning,
yeah,
to be honest, because, you know, in the very early stages, I don't go very well on lots of alcohol. I don't cope with it very well. I get quite depressed. I was already depressed enough. I didn't need to add anything on top.
Yeah.
I, you know, I'm a single mom. I had to function. I had a big job. So for me, just logically, that wasn't a crutch that I went to. I'm not saying I didn't drink.
Yeah.
It's just it wasn't and that's not a part of my toolkit.
Wow, you're lucky. You're lucky.
Yeah, I am because I have family members that aren't as lucky and I know.
Yeah.
But I also physically just don't. I know it makes me feel worse. And I also know that numbing whatever it was I was going through was not going to get me where I needed to go faster.
Alcohol is like having, it's like having a pause button for an annoying song, but you make this pact like, oh, I fucking hate this song, but you pause it, but you have to accept that when it's only for a certain amount of time and when it unpauses, it's going to come back louder and play again.
And still be as annoying,
and,
if not more.
Yeah, it'll be even louder and it will play all the way through and you won't be able to stop it. But we do it anyway, thinking the problem's going to be better in the morning and all it is way worse.
Yeah, that's it.
And you know what the great idea for that is? More drinking.
Keep going. Yeah.
And eventually, like if you're me, eventually like, oh, I'm going to die if I keep.
Yeah. You
know, there's never going to be enough that's going to make it. Be quiet for long enough.
Yeah.
So yeah, it can be. It's amazing that you avoided that. It really is. But it really goes to. I was so lucky because I had Audrey in Georgia. You were very lucky that you had this person who relied upon you.
Yeah.
It can be a houseplant. It can be a goldfish. It
can be a job.
Exactly. Yeah. Having a reason.
Yeah.
To get out of bed, understanding that there's other people that need you is such a huge, other things that need you, such a huge part of recovery from something like this.
Yeah. Volunteering is something I also engaged in. I've always been that way inclined. I lived in India for nearly a year volunteering but in the healing journey after Hamish, not straight away because I didn't have the capacity, but not long after, like, I looked for opportunities where I could give because my job is not always the most altruistic job in the world, you know, tech marketing, it's, you know, whatever. So for me, like, and I love marketing. It was more just I needed to fulfill another side of me that I wasn't getting through my work. So, you know, mentorship, I'm on the board of a men's mental health charity and that's all volunteer. I mentor teenagers through the RAISE Foundation and donate my time that way. So, and, you know, it's the most selfish thing you can do, volunteering. Everyone thinks you're great because you do it, but in actual fact for me it's a selfish act because of what I get from it and what it brings to my life. And it's like it sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but for me I'm like, I do it because I want to feel good about what I'm doing. So it's actually a very selfish act.
As someone who you met G on the way in, I've known her since she was 10, through her whole teenage journey.
Yes.
There were conversations, mostly Audrey, but I was in support where I could, around, you know, meeting people, around boys, around going out, going to parties when parents aren't there, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How are you going to talk? Have you thought about how what happened to you can affect, you know, the way that you help your child understand the world and what other people's intentions might be?
Yes, I have thought a lot about that. She's 13, nearly 14 now, so
these are the conversations that are happening.
These are the conversations and she's coming to realize more and more about what actually happened in a way that's age appropriate for her to understand. And I don't want her going through the world looking for the red flags, you know. I don't want that to be her experience. What, you know, the way that I sort of frame it is bold curiosity, you know. So be really curious. Ask the questions. Don't feel bad for asking the questions. If you don't get the answer you want, ask again. You know, in the case of my situation with Hamish, there were times I asked questions and I would say fobbed off. And then life was busy, I was distracted, I was working, I was parenting, and then I'd ask again, but I'd ask gently. And I think, you know, being more bold, being more curious about just looking that little bit deeper. And, you know, most people are going to do the right thing by you, but you need to keep your wits about you. You know, the world is not all unicorns and rainbows.
Yeah.
And I think it's just being aware. Just, I don't know, I don't want to scare anybody with this conversation.
No.
The lonely, you know, girls growing up through the world or young boys growing up through the world. But I think being super curious, I think, is helpful, and being bold about your curiosity. Don't apologize for asking to see something of someone's, you know, I was asking for logins for my trading account and they just never came. And I should have just kept on pushing. I should have been the squeaky wheel that needed the oil.
Right.
I really should have. And I was too distracted, passive, whatever I was at that moment.
I'm not your psych. That should's a word that.
I know. I was thinking that as I was saying it.
Yeah.
It is, look, again, it is what it is. It happened.
Yes. My guy, the guy that guides me, would say, you know what the good news is? You get to live the rest of your life not being that guy anymore.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank you, mate.
Yes.
It's like I did the best I could with what I knew at the time. Now I know better, so I do better.
And it's so easy to connect the dots in reverse.
Oh, mate, of course.
You know, should have done that, could have done that, would have asked that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not useful either.
No.
You know, it's not useful for anybody. It's just, what do we do moving forward?
Coulda, shoulda, woulda, didn't.
Coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Didn't.
Definitely
there's a fourth,
didn't.
There's a fourth word. Didn't. And that is another way of talking about acceptance. It's like, and I didn't. So now, this is where I'm going to go. This is what I'm going to do, because I'm yet to know of any kind of ability to transit through time.
Might be nice.
Oh,
sometimes.
I don't know what I'd do with it. You could have not spoken out about this. You could have not, you know, being so public. Why did you want to talk about this?
I wholeheartedly want to be Hamish McLaren's last victim. You know, the book is called The Last Victim because I was. I you know, it doesn't have to be Hamish. I would not wish this on anybody, you know, what I went through, what I lost, how betrayed I felt. So for me, you know, I feel this, like it's put a fire in my belly to have the conversations which are often hidden. You know, I'd never heard a story like this before. I'd seen those things on the news that were a bit clickbaity. I'd never heard something like this before. And yet once I started talking about it, it's all I hear about.
Yeah.
And for me, by having the conversation, if that means somebody else clicks something in their head and they go, oh, I really should get the logins to our joint accounts because I haven't seen them before, or I just need to check how much is in my superannuation. Like, if you start asking people about financial questions, like, do you have the logins to all of your investments and bank accounts together? If you don't, why don't you? Are they in both your names? How much is in your superannuation right now? How comfortable are you talking about your salary? Like, all of these questions start to rise up when we have these conversations. And money's not something we're all that comfortable talking about. And I've only realized this since I started talking about it. So my first and foremost, I don't want it to happen to anyone else. But secondly, I think they're conversations that are really important to have. They're important to have for ourselves, for our children, but also really important to have for the older generation in our lives who are incredibly financially vulnerable.
Oh, man.
You know, they're not as great with technology.
Yeah.
They may be lonely due to being widowed. You know, they could be sitting at home playing Words with Friend. They've got a new friend online. They're happy with that, and they don't know they're being groomed to hand over some money because they're just not as clued up.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got the most money to lose and the least amount of time to rectify it. So, and they are, in fact, the biggest cohort being scammed right now. So Australians 65 and older are being scammed the most for the most amount of money.
If you know all of your passwords, if you know how much is in your super last week and you know how much is in your super this week, when those people are looking at the footage of you walking down the street, they'll go, no. Because it's not you walking through the world being suspicious of others.
No.
It's you walking through the world with a suit of armor, really.
That's right.
And that frees you from being worried about other people. Like, oh, no, I'm the kind of person that knows this. And that immediately will be like, well, bye. You're like,
it's empowerment.
Yes.
You know, knowledge is empowerment. And again, not to be suspicious, but just to be in control of it. And, you know, money, whether we like it or not, gives us choices.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for women in certain situations. And it's really important that we have choices, all of us. And money is one of those things that gives that to us. And you know, say, you know, you can love your romantic partner, but just love your financial security more, you know, because without that, and this is the other thing we talk a lot about, is that you don't have to be conned by Australia's Most Notorious Con Man and lose your life savings like I did to be financially vulnerable. You know, you could lose your partner, so through death, and suddenly you don't know the logins, or you don't know the debt, or you don't know the monthly outgoings of your household because that job is being given to your partner. And you're financially vulnerable then because you just haven't, you know, kept on top of it, or you haven't had the discussions because, oh, it's a bit icky, it's about money. This woman was at the Writers Festival on the weekend, and she said, my husband and I have a document that's kept in the top drawer of the filing cabinet, and it's titled In the Unfortunate Event Of.
Yeah.
And she said every few months they go back to the In an Unfortunate Event document, and they go through it, and in that is all of the passwords, all of the kind of the financial situation that they're in, so that if either one of them passes, then the other one feels confident that they can cope. Because again, when you're in a grief state, your brain isn't thinking about what's my password and how do I get that, and I've got to call the bank, what's the number, you know. And having that there, again, it's just that empowerment that allows you to walk through the world knowing that I've got this.
Yeah.
You know, it's work. It's like no one loves the numbers. Like it can be hard, but it's so important. It's so important.
You have, I'm sure you are aware, but like I'll tell you, like not only helping people around bringing awareness, this kind of stuff, but to be an example of someone who's been through something so fucking terrible that it would be understandable, you know, they're dressed in black and never left the house again, just listening to the Smiths or something horrible like that, right? And people would go, yeah, I get it, right? But that you have chosen to be like, no, I am not going to let that make the choices the rest of my life. Just for people to see that is a pathway.
Yeah.
Because you can't be what you can't see.
Yeah.
That in itself is an enormous gift. So thank you for doing that. Oh. You know, it's really important. It's really important for people to see that even something as cataclysmic as this can be overcome.
Yeah. Anything, you know, it doesn't have to be this. I think there's capacity within all of us to rise after something terrible. You know, it takes hard work. It's but you know, it's, I don't know, it's a pretty cool world out there. I think I like living in it.
I do too. Thanks so much. And that was Tracy Hall. The book is called The Last Victim, and it's out right now. I loved that conversation. I absolutely loved how Tracy spoke about the kind of healing, and healing at that level, which requires not only resilience, but also a willingness to face and truly process difficult, really confronting emotions. Without those two things, in my experience, you're just going to be stuck with those difficult emotions in your body just forever. And I love the way she spoke about that. I also really liked how Tracy described the truly granular nature of her healing, just a little bit closer to the pin than yesterday. That's all that she's aiming for, and that is actually achievable. And it was magnificent to hear it come out of her mouth and hear something very similar to what I went through being described by somebody else. It was great. It was an inspirational conversation. Look, if Tracy can get through that and then get back out her front door, that is incredible. That is a huge reminder that what we are capable of, what we're actually capable of, despite what our emotional safety alarms might be telling us we're capable of, are two very different things. She's such an inspiration. I'm so glad she came. I hope you enjoyed it. If it helped you, please send it to somebody, share the episode. Thank you to everyone that helped me make the show today, Andy Ma and Mikey Ward, who did audio and video post-production, Abby Benno, who's our producer at large, Ella Brainerd-Jones, who's filling in for Abby on Matt Leaf, Toe Hider made all the music, Ben and Monica keep the lights on at OGTV. You can find the mailing list in the show notes. That's also where you can email me, or you can drop me a note at Instagram. I'll be back here on Friday. Thanks for being a part of it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.